try to cover a few different portions of the coming week's Sedra. We'll start right away at the beginning. Famous Rashi, in the beginning of the Torah, Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, Lohoya HaTorah Lahaskel, Ela Me'achodesh Hazel Lochem, Shehi Mitzvah Rishonesh and Itztavu Bo Yisrael. Torah shouldn't have started except from Parshas Bo, with the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people. Umatam Pasach B'Bereishis. Why did it start with Bereishis? So let's start with the question, understand the question, then we'll understand the answer. Lechora, the question doesn't make any sense. Because if the Torah would have been, after the first mitzvah, a list of mitzvahs, right, one after the other, that's what Torah is, then the question would make sense. Torah should have started. Torah is a book of mitzvahs. Should have started with the first mitzvah. But the Torah is not just a book of mitzvahs. After that mitzvah, there's the whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Then the story of what happened to them in the desert and all the episodes there. And there's mitzvahs interspersed. So if the Torah is a conglomeration of stories and mitzvahs, why is it more logical to start with the first mitzvah than to start with the first story? What's the question? And I'll start with B'nai Yisrael. Could be. That's my drush of this Shabbos, and it'll be something like that. But what I'm going to tell you now is completely different. Okay, true. In other words, what you're saying is that the main question over here is not so much mitzvahs. The question is, start with B'nai Yisrael. Okay, good. But that's not for now. Maybe next year we'll talk about that. But in my estimation, it means that the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people as a people, start with the mitzvah, why start with a story? So what's the question? There's a Rambam. The Rambam says like this, that the details of how Mashiach is going to come, no one will know until it happens. There is no Mesorah, not to the Nevi'im, not even to the Chachamim. And it's only according to the Psukim, as we see them, that we can assume, right, or to guess what it means. But there's nothing clear, and therefore, the Rambam says, one should not make these things the ikkar of his learning.
It's a derivation.
What?
It's a derivation.
Yeah, whatever. But there was never a Mesorah given clearly about these details. The Rambam says, therefore, a person shouldn't make these things the main thing of his learning. And then the Rambam says a third thing, because they don't bring you to Yiras Hashem or Avas Hashem. Knowing the details of Mashiach's donkey is going to be gray or black or white doesn't make you a greater Yirei Shamayim or Oev Hashem. Now, that last piece of information is l'chaora unnecessary. Even if these things would bring you to fear and love of God, you still shouldn't make it the main thing of your learning because they're not clear. Better learn something that you can come to some kind of definite conclusion and understanding, not something that is hazy. So why did the Rambam have to say that last thing? Why does the Rambam say, these things are not clear, there was never given any clarity, not to the Chachamim, not to the Nevi'im, and therefore you shouldn't make it the main thing of your learning because they don't bring you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem? Why do you need that last thing? So I think the Rambam, in that last thing, is explaining why there's no clarity. Why didn't the Torah tell us? Why didn't the Navi tell us? Why didn't Torah Shabbat Peh tell us these details? They'd be interesting. Why not tell it to us? Says the Rambam, because what's contained in the Torah is only things that'll bring you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. There's no nice, interesting tidbits of knowledge just for the sake of the knowledge. If they bring you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, then they're there. And if they don't, they're not there. Torah is not a book of information. It's a book of transformation. It's a book that's there to teach you how to get closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And there's nothing in the Torah that doesn't do that. And if it doesn't do that, it's not there. And if it is there, it does do that. That's what the Rambam means. There's a word from Rabbi Chezkel Avramsky.
But isn't that a subjective view?
What?
Isn't that a subjective view? I mean, there are tales in the Torah, stories in the Torah, lists of people.
The, We'll get to it. Hold on. Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah,
maybe you,
yeah, yeah. No, one second. One second. I'll tell you the answer to your question, and then we'll explain a little bit more. The answer to your question is a pasuk in the Torah. Torah says, "Ki lo dovah reiku mikem." Torah is not something empty from you. Okay, the im reiku, and if it appears to be empty, without reasoning, mikem, it's because you don't understand it, not because it's not there, right? There's nothing in the Torah that does not have some lesson to be learned from it, right? Something that will teach you halacha. Halacha meaning halichas olam, the way to get through this world. If it appears like not, we'll give some examples. Things specifically that you mentioned. Okay. Let's see one thing that signs. Reb Cheskel Avramsky says that is the exact message in the end of Megillas Esther. The second to the last pasuk in Megillas Esther is V'chol ma'aseh tokpo gvuroso uparoshas gedulas Mordechai halohem k'suvim al sifrei divrei hayom l'malchei modei uparos. That all of the events in Mordechai's life and the stories about Mordechai you can find in the history books of the kings of Modei uparos. So yes, what do you need a maramokum? Right. For further information about this topic, why don't you check the history books of Poras, whoever looked at them? They weren't available. They were the history books of the kings. Why does the Megillah have to tell me that? Says Reb Cheskel Avramsky, to tell me the following. If you want historical information, this is not the place to look for it. That you'll find in the history books of Malchei Modei Poras. What you'll find here is Yerushalayim. As history, Megillas Esther is a very poor history book. Because it takes from 12 years of Persian history a few episodes, one from this year, one from that, you put them together. What's the purpose of Megillas Esther? To teach us Yerushalayim. To teach you about the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not to teach you history. History, you find somewhere else, not here. Right? Even though it mentions historical occasions or whatever, it's not the purpose of Megillas Esther or the rest of the Torah. Give you another example. Also from the Sedra. So we'll kill two birds with one stone, get another part of the Sedra. The what's it called, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Asara Mamoros Nivra Ha'olam. The world was created with 10 utterances. The Kol Kach Lama, the Mishnah says, why so many? V'halo b'maymer echad yocholi baros. God could have created the world with one maymer. Ela, reason is, to give reward to the tzaddikim who preserved the world that was created with 10 mamoros, and to punish the wicked who destroyed the world, who was created Asar Mamaros. Very difficult Mishnah. How did the Tana know that God could have created the world with one Mimer? Maybe in order to create worlds, you need 10. Right? How did he know that? He didn't create worlds. So, well, God could have done it with one, maybe not. It's like asking a question, why don't we have 5 fingers? We could have 1, we could have 10. Right? On each hand. Who said? God knew that people need 5 fingers. That's the optimum. What's the question? If you look at Avos Reb Nosson, which is the brises that are more explanatory than the concise Mishnah, it adds a few words. And in Avos Reb Nosson says the following: Basara Mamoros Nivra Ha'olam. The world is created with 10 utterances. V'chimatzorich leboy olam bekach. What do we care about that? What do we need to know that? Right? We came into a world that's created. We're not going to create worlds. We don't need a do-it-yourself kit to know how many mamoras you need to create the world. It's not relevant to us. What do we need to know it? What's the question? It's interesting. Fine, it's interesting. Let it be in a science book, not in the Torah. Torah does not tell you things that are only interesting if it doesn't have some relevant bearing on your life. That's what Torah is. Torah brings you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. So the matzorik leboy olam bekach. What do we need to know then? That? That's what the Mishnah means. The kol kach lama. Not why did God need 10? For all I care, it could have been 1. Not that God could have created in 1. I don't know how many God needs, but I don't care. For all I care, it could have been 1. What do I have to know? It was 10. That's the question. The answer is no. There's a lesson here, even though it seems like just a piece of information that there were 10 utterances. It's to tell me the individual value of the world. It's not just in general valuable. Every individual thing, every part is important. And therefore, people who preserve the world are doing a tremendous thing, not just generally, but individually. And the same thing goes with people who destroy the world. So therefore, I learn Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, from this piece of information. Therefore, it's there. Another example. Same thing. Asora Doros Mi Adam Aviad Noah. And there too, it says in the Ovester of Nasan, Vichimatzorek Leboy, who cares? Who needs that historical information in the Torah? Put it in a history book. Why does it have to list the 10 generations between Adam and Noah? And then the 10 generations between Noach and Avram? Says the Mishnah, no, there's a reason. The 10 generations between Adam and Noah teach me how patient God is. That all these generations angered him. And he didn't destroy them with the flood until after 10 generations. So I learned something about both Avas Hashem, that God is patient, he doesn't punish immediately, and also Yiras Hashem, that comes a time when God does punish, that his patience runs out, and after the 10 generations, he did destroy them. So I learned Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. 10 generations between Noach and Avram, what do I need that for? Says the Mishnah, to tell me that it's possible that people can not fulfill their purpose in this world, and one person can come and get the reward of all of them, Avram Avinu. That's these 10 generations. Now let me tell you something I think is very interesting. You would think if the Torah records 20 generations, 10 and 10, in the beginnings of the world, the style of the record would be the same. But it's not. The first 10 generations, there's 3 sentences about each generation. Who the main person of the generation was, how old he was when he had his main son, how many years he lived after that and had children, and how old he was when he died, and he died. Those 3 things are mentioned in 3 sentences. You would think that the 10 generations between Noah and Avram be the same thing. Tell me who the person was, how old he was when he had his major son, how old he lived after that and had children, and how old he was when he died, and he died. No. In the second, next week's Sedra, in Noah, when it speaks about the second 10 generations between Noah and Avram, it only mentions 2 sentences for each generation. Who the person was and who his main child was, and that he lived after that and had children. But doesn't mention that he died and how old he was when he died. Even though you could figure it out, doesn't mention it specifically. Never says that these people died. Why? But like we said, the Torah is not there to tell you historical information. It only tells you what it needs to bring across a point of how to live in this world. Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. How to get through this world to get to Olam Haba. The message of the first 10 generations is that God is patient. And he didn't punish these 10 generations until 10 generations. Then he brought the flood. What do I have to know to really understand that lesson? I have to know that these people lived. I have to know that there was a lot of them. I have to know that they died peacefully on their bed in 900, 800 years old. Otherwise, I don't really appreciate that lesson. So I need all those bits of information to hit home. Wow, look at that. Here are these people, were wicked people. They lived to be 800, 900 years. They had a lot of children. They filled up the world. And God didn't destroy them. How about the second lesson? Second lesson was, there can be a lot of people who don't fulfill their purpose. And one person can come along and get the reward for all of them. I have to know that they lived. I have to know there was a lot of them. Do I have to know they died? No. That's not germane to the lesson. Therefore, the Torah doesn't say it. The only reason these sentences are in the Torah is to teach me the lesson. And therefore, what I need for the lesson is there. What I don't need for the lesson is not there. It would be interesting to know how old these people were when they died, and they died. Fine, go look in a history book. Not here.
Then why isn't there an emphasis of Yemot HaMashiach and Olam Haba? Because they would give me Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem if I knew.
There is. There's not an emphasis, because the main thing of the Torah is how to live in this world. Right? When you'll get there, you'll find out, right, the Torah hints to these things, right, mentions them, but the main thing is what's in front of you now. Because that's how you get to there. And right now the Torah's not interested in telling you the interesting, what's going to be in the future, but how to get there.
Well, not very interesting.
No. So therefore, the Nevi'im are full of Nevuos about Yemos HaMashiach, which is the next stage. And there are hints in the Torah about Olam Haba, but like the Rambam says, but the details won't make you any better. to know if the donkey's going to be white or black. Therefore, the details aren't there. The ideas are there, because that will bring you to Ahavas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, but not the details. In fact, I just wanted to say, to explain a Malbim. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to calculate when Mashiach will come. And Tepach Rucham Shom. So the Malbim, in his commentary, did calculate when he thought Mashiach was going to come. It passed already a long time. It was about 1970-something, according to his Cheshbonos. The Rambam also did it. The Ramban also did it. So they asked the Malbim, you know that it says in Halacha that you're not allowed to make these calculations. Why'd you do it? So he gave a story. He said there was once a man crossing Europe by stagecoach, by wagon, with his six-year-old son. And they're half an hour out of town. This is a six-month journey, okay, by wagon. And half an hour out of the town, as kids usually do, kid pipes up and says, are we almost there? Father slaps the kid across the face and he says, don't not ask that question again. 5.5 months go by, and the father picks his head out of the wagon and he says to the driver, are we almost there? The kid says, you hypocrite. When I asked that question, you slapped my face. And now you're asking the same question to the driver. The father says, a big difference. You asked me that question a half an hour out of our city. We had 6 months to go. Right? If you're going to keep asking the question, right, and be anxious, this is going to be a terrible trip. Now we're almost there. Now's the time to ask. It's the same thing. In the time of Chazal, the time for Mashiach was so far away that if people would make calculations, they give up hope. But now it's almost there. Now's the time to ask. Now, it's a very nice story. But how do you go against the halacha from a story? Now, the answer is, since the halacha is based on this idea that the details don't bring you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, that was then. But now that we're almost there, now it does bring you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. Now it's okay to know the details. That's, it's not 100%, but it's an idea. Okay, in any case. So therefore, based on this, and we could go on and on and on, one more example just for your sake. Torah says in the genealogy of Esav, V'timnah hoysa pilegesh alifas ben Esav. Timnah was a pilegesh to Esav's son Eliphaz, right? Vativolid lois Amalek, and she had Amalek with Eliphaz. Now, who in the world cares who Timnah was, right? I have to know Timnah was a pilegesh. Who cares? In fact, it says Menashe HaMelech, one of the reasons he lost his chelek in Olam Haba is because he made Drosha Sadofi and he said, Moshe had nothing better to write than Timnah Hoysa Pilegesh. That's what I need to know, right? History of Esav and who his concubines were. Who cares? Mara says, no, there's a lesson from this. That is, Timnah was a princess. And she gave up marrying into royalty because she wanted to marry into the household of Avram Avinu. She came as a young woman to Avram and he rejected her. She came as a middle-aged woman to Yitzchak and he rejected her. Excuse me, as an older woman to Yaakov and he rejected her. And Chazal say that they did the wrong thing. They should not have pushed her away with two hands. They should have tried to makarif her somehow. But they didn't. So she said, if I can't get into the front door of this family, I'll come through the back door. She became a pilegesh to Eliphaz ben Esav, just to be in the family of Avram Avinu. Rather be a pilegesh in the black side of this family than a princess somewhere else. She married Eliphaz, and they had Amalek. And part of the reason they had Amalek is a punishment that she was pushed away by Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. Okay. Part of the reason they pushed her away is because they saw that she was going to have Amalek. So it's, you know, in any case. So what do we see from here? That's what seems to be an obscure, unimportant point can teach me tremendous things. And this, how much Torah is on Amalek and why Eliphaz and why, it's unbelievable. So what seems to be an obscure ay, so you'll tell me, okay, but there's so many other things there. This is one that we understand, we know. The other ones have the same things. If you delve deeply enough into one of the layers of Torah, down to the secrets of Torah, each thing has something to teach me. It's not rake. And if it's rake, it's mikem, it's because you don't understand. Because you haven't delved deeply enough to understand what the lesson is. But it's there. And that's what the whole thing of Limud HaTorah is. So now we understand the question. The question is, the Torah basically is a book of mitzvahs. Certain mitzvahs are open, certain are clothed in stories. In fact, the Ramban says the word Torah, when it's an umbrella word, it means everything in the Torah. But sometimes Torah can't mean everything because it's together with a bunch of other descriptions. Torah, mitzvahs, chukim, mishpatim. So what is Torah? Says the Ramban, in that context, Torah means the stories of the Torah. That seems incongruous. Because Torah means to teach. Horah. How could the stories be Torah? The answer is the stories are mitzvahs, clothed, like the Zohar says, in stories. But there's nothing in the Torah that's not a mitzvah. Therefore, the question was, the Torah should have started with the first mitzvah, clear mitzvah, given to Klal Yisrael, because how you start something sets the pattern. So if we'd open the book of the Torah with a mitzvah, I know this is a book of mitzvahs. Now when I got the stories, I'll understand to understand them in light of mitzvahs. But if it starts with a story, there's a danger. I could think it's just a story. That's the question. Torah should have started with the first mitzvah in order to set the pattern and then have the stories. Don't start with stories where you could misunderstand and think they're only stories. So then what's the answer? What's the answer? The answer is, Matam Posach Bebereishis. Why did the Torah then start with Bereishis? Koach Maisav Higid Liyamo. God wanted to tell us the strength of his deeds in order that we should get Eretz Yisrael. And in case, theoretically speaking, right, anybody ever came and claimed that we stole Eretz Yisrael, we conquered a land that belonged to seven nations, right? Theoretically, that anybody would ever have such a taina. We have an answer. Bereishis Bara Elokim, God created the world. He gave it to you, took it away from you, gave it to us. He can do what he wants with it. That's the reason why it says Bereishis. Few questions. First of all, we didn't get Eretz Yisrael till 40 years after we left Mitzrayim, which means 40 years after we got the Torah. After that, we didn't conquer Eretz Yisrael for another 7 years. Why did the Torah have to start with this lesson? And with this lesson. Have a little asterisk after Le'ene Kol Yisrael. By the way, Bereishis Bara Elokim Eretz Yisrael. Now you have an answer to the Goyim who say that you stole their land. God owns the world. He can do what he wants with it. Why do we need it in the beginning? Why does it have to start with Bereishis? Could have ended with Bereishis. One question. Second question. It would be very nice, you know, if the Goyim would accept that. But they're not going to accept that. Well, it says Bereishis. They have their Koran. They have this one, that one, whatever. Well, they have to accept because it says in our Torah. Right? And I'm sure that if the ambassador, Israeli ambassador to the United Nations would get up tomorrow and say, look, I forgot to say something. You see, Bereishis Bara Elokim Eretz Yisrael Shamayim V'Haaretz, and God gave us Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there's nothing to talk about. And then all the nations said, why didn't you say that before? Right? All this arguing or whatever, if we'd have known that, we surely wouldn't have any problems. Right? I doubt, it would be nice if he said it, but I kind of doubt that it's going to have any effect. So what does it help? Thirdly, it says that when they, in fact, came with that complaint to Alexander the Great, he had a world court. They took us to the world court of Alexander the Great, the Canaanim, and they said that we're bringing proof from their Torah. It says in their Torah, Eretz Canaan, it's the land of Canaan. They took it away from us. We want it back. So Gvia ben Psisa went as the lawyer for the Jewish people in front of the world court, and he said, you're bringing a proof from our Torah, I'll bring you a proof from our Torah too. And what would you think he's going to say? Bereishis, this is what time is waiting for. No. He said, it says in the Torah that Canaan was to be a slave to his brothers. Whatever a slave owns belongs to his masters. So you're right. Eretz Yisrael belongs to you. You belong to us. And whatever you own belongs to us. And it's been a while since you served us. So we'd like, back service. So they ran away. It was a Shemitah year. They left their fields. And we had a lot of vegetables to eat during that Shemitah year. So here's the whole purpose of Bereishis. And he didn't even use it. And another question is, what do you need to hold Bereishis for? Just tell me, Bereishis Bara Elokim. Maybe till Lech Lecha, that God promised Eretz Yisrael to Avraham Avinu. After that, I don't need the rest of it. Why do I need all the stories of Yosef and his brothers and all the other things there? And the last question is the real, I think, really, essential question. That is, if God was concerned that the nations of the world consider us thieves, conquerors, occupiers, then why did he give us Eretz Yisrael in such a suspicious way? Why did he command us to kill men, women, and children, conquer a land where there were seven nations thriving here, and we came in and killed them, men, women, and children, and took their land? Looks pretty bad. And then we need Bereishis to tell me, no, God is the one who created the world, he has the right to tell us what to do, and we did what he said. Why couldn't God have avoided the question? I mean, I could find a few ways, right? God could have given every goy in Eretz Yisrael before we came, right, AIDS, or a heart attack, or a stroke, and they all could have died, right? All of them. And we came, there's a big cemetery, all these dead bodies, and we did a service to the world. We buried all these bodies and took over a land that nobody was here. No problems, nobody would have any questions, right? Or, I have another way, even better, more natural. God could have made the economic situation in Eretz Canaan at the time very, very bad. All the Canaanim would have gone to New York to drive cabs and run pizza shops and falafel shops, and nobody would, what's it called? Nobody would be here, and we take over the land. Why did God give us a land where there was seven thriving nations that we had to murder to get the land? And then, looks pretty bad, looks like we're a bunch of thieves that conquered somebody else's land. And then God says, well, I'm going to tack on Bereishis to the Torah to answer that question. Avoid the question. To answer it, I want to say like this. The answer is not for the goyim. That's clear. They don't have to know, right? We're thieves, not thieves, and whatever we say is not going to help with them. And therefore, Gevir ben Pisa didn't even bother with this. He said, you're bringing proof in the Torah, I'll bring a simple proof too. You're our slaves, whatever. The purpose is koach maishav higid li amo. God told it to us to give us Eretz Yisrael. We shouldn't think we're thieves. So what do we need to know this lesson for? Why does it have to be in the beginning? And why does it have to be the whole Sefer Bereishis? The answer, I think, is the following. This is not the beginning of the Torah. Listen to the Rashi. Lohoya ha-Torah la-haschil, ela me-hachodesh ha-zelochem. Torah should have started from ha-chodesh ha-zelochem. U-matam posach bivreishis. It should have said, u-matam hischil bivreishis. Same word. Why did it start with Bereishis? Because it didn't start with Bereishis. It started with ha-chodesh ha-zelochem. But there's a psicha. There's a preface to the Torah. Bereishis is not the beginning of the Torah. The beginning of the Torah is HaChodesh HaZalachem. This is the preface to the Torah. These are the Roman numeral pages. Page 1 starts at Parshas Bo. So why? Why is a psicha? Why do you need a psicha? Why do you need a preface? I think the idea is the following. What's the purpose of Eretz Yisrael? The purpose of Eretz Yisrael is diametrically opposed to what the secular Zionist purpose for Eretz Yisrael was perceived. Right. Herzl perceived that anti-Semitism was a function of us being abnormal. We're not normal. We don't have our own land, our own language, our own post office, our own army, right? And Achad Ha'am added to that, and our own perverts. So we're not a normal nation. So if we just have our own land and own language, and we'd be just like everybody else, they wouldn't hate us. So, Baruch Hashem, today we have our own land and our own language and our own post office and our own army, and nobody hates us. They just love us because we're normal. Okay. Not only haven't we solved anti-Semitism, we created a new, more refined anti-Semitism. People don't hate Jews with long noses anymore. They hate Israelis who are pushy occupiers or whatever. Who are those pushy Israeli occupiers? Everybody from the Naturi Karta down with all those long noses. Same thing. It's just now it's more respectable because we don't, chas v'shalom, hate. We're not racist. It's the Jews that are racist, right? So in any case, so what is the purpose of Eretz Yisrael? The purpose of Eretz Yisrael is just the opposite. That we should have our own army and our own post office, but not like the nations of the world. To do it in a holy way. To have our own society in Eretz Yisrael, in a holy land where every aspect of society is holy. Holiness does not mean sitting and saying Tillim all day. It doesn't even mean sitting and learning Torah all day. It means that every aspect of life you do in a way that bespeaks godliness. You act in a godly way. how you conduct your business, how you conduct your married life, your social life, your political life, is godly. At least in one area we are accomplishing that, because at least in politics, when the nations of the world hear about Israeli politics, what do they say? Oh my God. So we are reminding the world about God when... in any case, I don't think that's what the Rebbe Shem had in mind, but that's the purpose. Now, there's something that you have to have before you can do the first mitzvah, and that is the right standards and values and outlook on the world. Because if you don't, then the mitzvahs are impossible. I'll give you an example. Imagine two young high school seniors learning in a yeshiva in America, because here it doesn't really apply, but in America. And they have to make a decision what they're going to do after high school. They're going to go on to learn yeshiva full-time, or they're going to go to college, get a career, and learn also, what's it called, what they'll go to college at night, or learn at night, whatever it may be. Now, in my estimation, either of those choices could be the right one for different people. But I'm making up the mashal, and according to the mashal, right, here it's a unique situation. These two boys, if they would stay learning Torah full time, would be the next Gedolei Yisrael. How do I know? I made up the mashal. And sure, there's no doubt. I can make up a mashal any way I want. When I accepted to give this shiur, I had one condition. I can make up any mashal I want, so don't argue with my mashal. Right? These two boys will be the next Rabbi Akiva Eger and Chazon Ish, the leaders of the Jewish people. If they don't learn Torah full time, they'll be very fine people, but they won't be the leaders of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael needs leaders. Okay, that's given. Now, both of them are influenced by parents, friends, teachers, all different ways. Okay. Now, these two boys grew up in different societies. One grew up in the society we're familiar with, okay, where success is basically starts not with an S, but with a dollar sign. Okay? If you ask any Pashta guy in the street, what, tell me in one sentence what success is? Money, power, influence, fame. So one boy grew up in that society, and even though he's been taught and he knows that that's not really what's true, his knee-jerk reaction when he hears the word success is money, power, career, whatever. Then he has to stop and think and say, well, maybe that's not really what success in the world is. The other one was born up in a different society. Society which doesn't exist. Society where everything was based on Torah ideals. Meaning, the billboards didn't say, what's it called, smoke this cigarette and then you'll have this car and you'll be riding on a horse and be, you know, what's it called, and give you these mental messages that if you want to be successful, right, and rich and famous and powerful and macho, all you have to do is buy this washing machine, buy this car, buy the, whatever. Instead, the billboard said, like, if you buy this washing machine, it will give you good midos, or whatever. That was the selling point. Everything was based around Torah values, okay? Now, these two boys have a decision to make. Okay, according to the marshal that I'm giving, the decision should be they should go on for full-time learning. But they have, you know, a... So the one who was brought up thinking that success is a career, money, whatever, he has a tremendous nesayon. Because he's going to have to sacrifice success for Torah. That's a hard decision. He may make the decision, but it's not easy. How about the other guy who was brought up in a society where success is Torah? He doesn't have too much of a difficulty. Why would he want to sacrifice success to get a career? It's the opposite mindset. So if you have the right mindset, then the mitzvahs are easy. If you have the wrong mindset, the mitzvahs are very, very hard to do. That's what it says, that mitzvahs are basically easy to do, but you have to have the right value standards. If you have the wrong values and standards, the mitzvahs are impossible. Because when you're trying to put a square thing on a round base, it doesn't fit. But if you put a square thing on a square base, that's fine. The Me'ilah, the Torah said like this, before we can start the first mitzvah, we've got to set your standards, values, outlook on life. Got to set the base. What do you base your standards, values, outlooks on? The nations of the world? If they are your standard, then mitzvahs are going to be almost impossible because they won't fit your mindset, your foundation. If you set the Ribbono Shel Olam standards and values as your base, then the mitzvahs are going to be a cinch because they fit very nicely into that mindset. Memela Torah said like this: the whole purpose of Eretz Yisrael is that you should create a society that's based on God's value standards and so on. If you're going to use the nations of the world as your guide, then you have no rights to Eretz Yisrael. You're a bunch of thieves in their mind. And you don't need Eretz Yisrael, because if you base your whole outlook on them, there's no purpose for Eretz Yisrael. And you're a bunch of murderers. But if you base your standards and values on me, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, then first of all, you're not murderers. I told you to do it. I have a right. I gave these people life. I have a right to take it away from them. I have a right to tell people to take it away. And that's the only difference between us and Hitler. We committed genocide, but we did it because God told us, and he has a right to tell us. If Hitler claimed that God told him, fine. When time comes, we'll find out who God told him. But we know God told us, told Moshe, told Yoshua. But there's no other answer. There's no other difference. God, who gave these people life, told us to take it away from them. Nobody told Hitler to do it. He did it on his own. That's murder. In any case, so if we base our standards and values on God, then we have a right to Eretz Israel, and we're not murderers. And that's the preface to the Torah. Now you can have mitzvahs. If you base your standards and values on the nations of the world, then you're a bunch of murderers. And you're a bunch of thieves. And you have no rights to Eretz Israel. And you don't need Eretz Israel. And you can't even start the Torah, because then the mitzvahs are foreign to your mindset. It'd be impossible to keep mitzvahs. So really the Torah starts with the first mitzvah. But you need a preface to the Torah to be able to fulfill those mitzvahs. You need first the right standards, values, outlooks. That's what Bereishis is all about. Bereishis tells me that if you have the right Torah mindset, which the Torah tells us, Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, and the negative, Esav, Yishmael, and so on. We get an idea of what God's standards and values are, and then we have a right to Eretz Israel, and we need Eretz Israel. If not, then we have no rights to Eretz Israel, and we don't need Eretz Israel, and there's no place for the Torah to start. So you can't start the Torah until you have the proper preface.